Welcome to Changeling Cast, the podcast dedicated to reading and dissecting urban fantasy, paranormal, and speculative romance series. I'm your host, Mara, from the YouTube channel Books Like Woe, and this season we are making our way through Nalini Singh's Psy Changeling series. This week we're talking about Silver Silence, and I have kind of the opposite reaction that I had to Allegiance of Honor, which we talked about last time, and I'm pretty surprised. I think this is the first time, you guys can, you know, fact check me here, but I think this is the first time I remember liking a book better than I actually liked it on the reread. Now, not like drastically different, but I think this time, I remember when I first read Silver Silence and first reviewed it, I was looking at the review I wrote on Goodreads, and I acknowledged at the time, like, yeah, I think that there's some flab in this, but I just like it. And I basically still have the same opinion, except the flab, I think, bothers me more this time around. And I have some theories. So let's do our plot synopsis, and then we'll talk about, like, why I think this time I had a harder time with this book. Okay, so Silver Silence. Silver is in the title because we are getting a book with Silver Mercant. I am so excited because I remember when I realized that being very excited because I really liked Silver in the first season, and I think that it was smart to pick what I think is fair to say was an anticipated heroine as sort of the first book in season two, because we have some grounding in who she is, what she's about. She's connected to Caleb, and him and Sahara are one of the most beloved couples from the first season. Like, I think that that was smart, and I remember being excited realizing that. Her hero, and you guys, again, can fact check me if I'm wrong, but is someone that we've never explicitly heard from before. We've definitely heard of the Stonewater Bears outside of Moscow, like that has been alluded to, but I'm not sure that we had met Valentine before this book. We definitely met Selenka, who is the head of the, oh gosh, is it the Black Edge Wolves? The Russian wolf pack. We've definitely seen her before, but I don't know that we'd ever actually seen Valentine up until this book. But regardless, he is the alpha of the bear clan. That is basically the wolves and the bears in Russia are equivalent to the leopards and the wolves in California. They are like the dominant groups. They basically control the entirety of Russia, and they are both based out of Moscow, but then they really, none of them are much in the city. They're all pretty much kind of like out in the wilds. We actually find out in this book that they essentially consider Caleb to be the third alpha of Russia, and they consider his territory to be Moscow. So I thought that was like a fun little detail. But anyway, so we've heard of this group before, but we haven't spent time with them before. And I don't think we've ever even met Valentine, but someone can correct me. I should also note, there's a lot of Russian folks in this book. Where I have been able to get pronunciations, I will do my best to honor them. But specifically for Valentine, I cannot tell if this is an actual Russian name or not, and I was not really able to find like a clear pronunciation guide. You know, the southerner in me wants to call him Valentine, like Valentine Nikolov, but that's not his name. So I'm going to do my best to just call him Valentine, and I apologize if that is not the correct pronunciation. Anyway, Valentine and the bears are a really fun addition to the Psy Changeling world because they are a different kind of shift. Well, they're literally a different kind of shifter than we've seen before, but also just their kind of species personality is pretty different than what we've seen characterized before. They are far and away the most sort of happy-go-lucky of the shifter groups we've encountered. They're all about having a good time, not taking life too seriously, kind of cutting up. And I would say, I don't think Nalini Singh really writes himbos, but Valentine is the closest thing to a himbo we get in Psy Changeling. But not because he's not smart. He actually is smart. And I think this is, well, again, we'll get into it. But he actually is pretty smart. But he's the most sort of like happy-go-lucky. He's the most, he's very blunt. They're often there's a lot of discussion about him not being subtle, and whenever he's trying to be subtle, he thinks about being sneaky like a cat. So he has to kind of purposefully get into that mindset. So I will say that, well, okay, I feel like I'm getting into my critiques. Focus, Mara. Let's talk about the plot. Plot. Valentine has had his eye on Silver for quite some time, and he has been very slowly trying to start courting her. The book opens where he has snuck into her apartment building, and he is basically trying to court her, trying to flirt with her, etc. When he does that, he interrupts her breakfast, and pretty shortly thereafter, she starts to convulse, and we find out that bears apparently have, like, the sharpest smelling sense of any shifter. He immediately can smell the poison that she ingested as a part of her breakfast. Dun, dun, dun! So we have sort of like a I keep getting into my critiques. I'm going to try to hold them back. We get into what appears to be a kind of whodunit thriller plot engine for this, because who has poisoned Silver and why? He is able to get in contact with Caleb, who immediately takes her to medical care, and Grandma Mercant comes, Ina, and between them, they realize that probably Silver was poisoned by someone in the Mercant family, because she basically, like, she has what they think is pretty much airtight security, so who else could it have been? It would only be people she trusted and wouldn't have known was there to poison her. So that is sort of like the inciting incident, and what they agree before Silver wakes up is that she's gonna come and stay with the Bear Clan in their home base, which is called Den Home. So she's going to come to Denholm and hide out. That's the real purpose. To the rest of the world, it's going to be like, oh, the MNET director is trying to make inroads and learn more about various groups and, you know, making stronger connections across the races. So that's sort of like the official party line. That the reality is she's hiding out from this poisoner. So from here, we get basically two. We have the romance and then the macro plot. We'll start with the romance. So, as I said, Valentine has had his eye on Silver for quite some time. She realizes as the book goes on, she's been having an emotional reaction to him, even though she didn't classify it as such at the time. But he basically realizes that she is very likely his mate pretty early, and by the 50% mark, he's, like, completely sure that she is his mate. So she, however, has maintained silence, and she has done that because we find out, as the book goes on, that she has a designation of telepathy. She's, like, I think a 9.3, so she's a very strong telepath, and her designation is a TPA. And prior to silence, TPAs did not usually even survive childhood, because basically her telepathy it almost is like connected into her auditory senses. So it is as if she can hear everything everywhere. And it basically, her shields are the only thing that is keeping the walls of all of that noise from being in her mind constantly and driving her mad. That shield, we also find out, is directly tied to emotion. So she realizes as the book goes on that her shields have already been eroding as soon as the Psynet started disintegrating and she had to plug into the honeycomb, which involves, you know, plugging into an Esai and having that level of emotional connectivity to someone. So her shields have been crumbling anyway, but she thinks that she literally has to maintain silence because otherwise she will go crazy and she will kill herself. So that is kind of what has kept her from having any openness in theory to Valentine. But she does realize the more she's in Denholm that her defenses against him have been eroding and that she is really drawn to him and she is really curious about what they could have together. And he sort of challenges her of like, hey, you thought this was the case, but you've thought a lot of things were the case in terms of kind of the rules of silence. Like, how will you ever know if you don't actually explore this. And she realizes that she does want to do that. There's some teasing back and forth between them about, like, her wanting to have, like, a sex experiment with someone. And ultimately, she kind of just says, like, yeah, I do want to see what it would be like. This is a safe space for me to do this because, you know, I'm with the most emotional of creatures. There's not going to be any judgment on me. And I kind of want to explore this with Valentine. And he's obviously ecstatic. So they start exploring that. Their relationship progresses. It's a very slow burn for the first half of it, which really works for me. I like a slow burn. And then once she kind of pulls the plug, though, it goes very quickly. Things escalate very quickly. They start, you know, having physical contact. They end up being sexually intimate. And then when she realizes that the issue she has with her shields are coming back, she also realizes that it's too late. Like, she can't really reconstruct them in the context of being still plugged into the honeycomb. So basically there's no way out for her. And because of that, she basically says, like, I would rather experience everything I can with you while I can. So around the, like, 50 to 60% mark, she goes full hog with Valentine. And she accepts the mating bond, and they are mated. So they are mated. And then he suggests reaching out to Ashaya and Amara because they were the ones who are working on that hive mind chip. If you'll remember that all the way back in book, like, 4 or 5, they were working on that. And so he basically says, like, you should reach out to them so that maybe they can recreate it and make one just for you and, like, customize it to you. And so, because it's either that or she's probably going to end up dying, they both agree that that's the right thing to do. And she's like, but what's going to happen? Like, if I'm emotionless again, I won't want to be your mate, or, like, it will sever the mating bond. Like, what's going to happen? And he basically is like, well, you're alive. Like, if you're alive, I can bear it. Ha, bear. There's a lot of bear puns in this. But if you're alive, I can bear it. So, like, this is what we should do. So they go forward with that. And Ashaya and Amara collaborate with Samuel Rain, who you'll remember is the one who put together Vasek's, you know, his prosthetic, and, like, he's a very cutting edge sort of, like, biotech engineer. And what they come up with is a procedure and a chip. I can't remember if they actually put in a chip, but they come up with, like, a surgery, basically, to sever the different neural pathways that are causing this issue for TPAs. And they also put in some filaments into her brain that could reconnect her to her emotions if she chose to do it. But the problem is, once she wakes up purely silent, like, perfectly silent, she is not likely to want to reinitiate those emotions. So she vows to Valentine before she goes into the surgery, like, first of all, like, you know, we are allies for life regardless. I will remember that. Even if I'm silent, I will understand that I have promised to always, like, protect you and to protect your clan. But also, he gets her to promise that she will go on 10 dates with him once she wakes up. And again, because she's made a promise, she knows that even if she's silent, she will want to honor that promise. So that is sort of, it's an interesting structure because they have, like, a whole romance for the first, like, 60 to 70%. Then she has the surgery and it's like they're starting all over again. She is perfectly silent. She doesn't understand why she would have even wanted the opportunity to have her emotions reconnected. And it, like, is breaking Valentine's heart. It's very sad. And she moves back into the city into a different apartment than the one she was in. Partly because the appearance of things, they're not telling people that they're not together, basically. Even though she's silent, she doesn't want to compromise his position. And so it's sort of just left ambiguous exactly what's going on. But she's living in the city in one of the apartment buildings that is run by changelings. And he starts to essentially, like, court her again. And what we, the reader, notice is that even though she is perfectly silent, she does have still some of these, like, habits that she picked up while she was with the bears. Like, for instance, one of the first signals that she was sort of slipping in her silence was that she let him feed her an apple. And we notice that even when she's eating her nutrient stuff, like her bland, sigh, boring food, that she still has an apple that she's eating with it. So there's these little hints that, yes, she is silent, but there's a part of her, or like, there, she is still potentially on the path to reconnecting with her emotions, and we know that there's like a physiological way for her to do that if she should choose to kind of like reestablish those pathways. And so slowly we see her making these decisions that are not totally silent, and she's going on these dates with Valentine, and slowly but surely we realize that she's like reconnecting and rediscovering her desire for him. She makes the sort of, on the surface at least, cold decision that yes, they should have children together because that would be good for her position as someone in the MNET, like that she has basically like a half changeling child that would like kind of cement her commitment to these cross racial, you know, connections and ties. So that kind of opens the door. So there's just a lot of like slow buildup. And then by the end, unsurprisingly, there's sort of like this big moment and she fully reconnects to Valentine, and she is ready. Like basically when they're kind of running down the poisoner side of the plot line, they just are really vibing. They're having great banter. And by the end of all of that, she realizes that she does have these connections again. She wants to be emotional, and she like fully accepts and connects with him in the mating bond, which was never severed, but it was almost like it was numbed or like dormant. It revives. Everybody can see it on the signet, and she stays in the signet. That was another thing. She thought that she was going to get pulled out of the signet if she accepted the bond, but she doesn't. So, you know, it's a happily ever after for them, and she's going to go live with him in Denholm, and like, that's all good. In terms of some of the macro plot stuff, so in terms of the poisoning, we get these points of view from somebody who is referred to as quote unquote the human patriot. And this person has arranged for this poisoning, and we can't tell from his perspective exactly if it truly is a Mercant that he's collaborating with or not. That doesn't become clear until like almost the end of the book. So he's the one who orchestrated the poisoning. He's also working with, oh gosh, what is it called? I think it's called Hapma, which is the Humans Against Psi something. It's basically like a radicalized anti-Psi human group. And they are trying to court the Human Alliance to help them, but the Human Alliance is not into it. And they start having all of these human-directed terrorist events, basically saying it is better for humans to die than to become slaves to the Psi. The other thing that they find out is the thing that we found out in Allegiance of Honor, which is that the Psi are going to have these connections to humans for the Psi not to survive. And they think that that means that the Psi are going to, like, control them into doing that. And the whole point of this is that the Psi can't control the humans to do that. It has to be voluntary. Like, that's a part of the whole, like, connectedness between the races, is that it has to be voluntary. And so we see that progressing. It's interesting because the rhetoric is very similar to pure Psi, but it's like the human equivalent. And we see them basically, there's like this initial big bombing in Moscow, which Silver and Valentine respond to. But then there's also all of these follow-up events around the world. And so that is like one of the big kind of macro elements. And we also see from the architect's perspective that it is specifically not a part of the consortium. And that the consortium, there's this like good clarification section from the architect's point of view, where the architect is basically saying, we don't really have like ideology alliances. We want chaos because it's good for business. And like all of this murdering mayhem is not good for business. It's not subtle, etc. And the architect also realizes that they probably need to cull their numbers a little bit because they may have taken on board with them some people who were more extreme than what it is that the consortium itself is wanting to do. Like they don't want ideological extremists. They only want people who are against interracial cooperation because it eliminates business opportunities for them. So, following this line of the poisoner plot, they ultimately discover that the poisoner is Akshay Patel's organization. It was basically one of Silver's neighbors brought a guy home. He drugged her and then snuck into Silver's house during a orchestrated blackout across the grid. during that, he was able to get into her house and poison some of her food. And so he was tied to Akshay Patel. They find that guy, and then they get to Akshay through him. And Ina Merkant is the interrogator of him, and that is a very interesting moment. We also find out, by the way, interesting connection here, Ina's specific TK capability is a undocumented sub-designation, because so few people have it, where she can control machinery, and I assume that that's an allusion to Dev Santos, he's the leader of the Forgotten, and that he basically can, you know, become one with machinery. I'm assuming that that's meant to be a connection, that basically this has been a designation, but in the Cyanet it was so stifled. Well, Ina has that designation, and so when Akshay tries to kill her with a gun, he is unsuccessful because she just takes that gun away from him. So anyway, she interrogates him, and basically she sets him up, like, she threatens him and coerces him to the point where he's basically gonna be their, like, kind of mole and help them try to get in with the consortium and or this Hapma? I can't remember right now, but he's gonna help them do that. So that is how the poisoner thing resolves, which is good, because I think a lot of Silver's internal conflict in this one is, like, the only people she trusts are her family, and if she can't trust her family, what does that mean? We get, we also meet Arwen, who is kind of her twin brother. They have different mothers, but the same father, and they happen to be born on the exact same day. So they are basically twins in the sense of, like, they have grown up completely together. And Arwen is an empath, and he has been sort of, like, the secret weapon or the secret to the Merkant's success over the last 30 years, because while a lot of these other families were getting more and more kind of, like, callous and, you know, going a little crazy probably, he kept their family kind of rooted just by existing, and he has kept Silver very rooted. But anyway, he's one of the first Merkants that is cleared, and so we get time with him, and it's very sweet seeing him trying to figure out how to connect with his sister, who he knows needs to be silent, but, like, he wants that connection with her. I thought that was very sweet. He also comes to Denholm, and he and Pasha, who is one of, you know, he's like a hottie, who is one of Valentine's right-hand guys. He and Arwen are, you know, making eyes at each other. So that is also set up as a potential future development, is that they're kind of dancing around each other, and Arwen doesn't quite know what to think of this bear guy, who is, you know, all charm and dimples. So, anyway, so we get that connection with Arwen, and then I guess other macro plot things you need to know. Yeah, so basically just that the whole human connection thing in the Cyanet is, like, increasingly gonna be a problem, and they're trying to figure out, the ruling coalition of the Psi, that is, they're trying to figure out how to go about this. One, I thought this was a cute idea. Basically, Sahara has set up a cafe that is specifically aimed at all three races and trying to get them to just connect casually in Moscow. Because she's, like, trying to facilitate opportunities for Psy to just, like, meet humans and changelings and make connections with them. But anyway, I thought that was a cool idea. But the ruling coalition is kind of trying to decide how they need to share or not share this information with different people. And also how they can make humans trust them. So at the beginning of the book, Caleb goes to Bowen Knight, and who, by the way, his implant to protect him against Psi interference has been failing and is continuing to fail, as well as all of his top people. But anyway, so that is still sort of a ticking time bomb, but he goes to Bowen and he actually tells him exactly what the problem is. And Bowen at first is just like, I don't care, like, whatever. Now you understand, like, you can't treat humans like this and then expect us to just trust you. But then Caleb also reveals to him, like, the need for biofeedback, and that if the Cyanet fails, basically he's condemning an entire race to extinction, and Bowen is a good person, and so he can't deal with that. And he's like, look, I just don't see how this is ever gonna work if humans can't trust you. So, like, if you help us figure out how we could have, like, shield implants that would keep Psy from being able to manipulate us, then maybe that would work. But, like, I don't see how this is going to work without that. And the ruling coalition basically has this very interesting debate talking about should they do that with conditions or not. And basically, Ivy Jane is arguing and saying, we can't put conditions on this because if it's not freely given, like, it doesn't, that's not the right way to start to actually do this in good faith. And Nikita is sort of arguing, like, well, we have to put conditions on it. And basically they have this sort of, like, pivotal moment of, like, are we going to be like the old Psy Council, who was coercive and all they wanted was control and they were authoritarian? Or are we actually going to set, like, a new precedent of how we're going to be interacting with the rest of the world? And so I thought that that was, like, an interesting and key moment of sort of, like, the political development or, like, the ideological development of the council. And they ultimately do rule that they're going to help humans figure out how to create these shields without a condition. So that's, like, a big development there. And then the other big development is that Hapma, whatever they're called. I should just look this up, but I'm having more fun just stumbling through it. They have an assassination attempt on Bowen's beloved sister, Lily, because they think that if she is killed and they can blame it on a side, that that will help radicalize him. But he sees that she's about to be shot and he takes the bullet for her. And by the end of the book, he is still hanging on to life just by a thread. So he is, like, I think in a coma. He's on, like, a bunch of machines to help, like, with life support. So there's that. The other macro, well, it's a micro plot because it's Valentine's internal conflict, but I do think that this is an important development on, like, understanding how changeling packs work. So Valentine's pack is currently divided. About 25% of them split off when Valentine became the alpha approximately 8 months earlier. And that is because Valentine comes from a long line of incredibly dominant bears. His great-grandfather sort of, like, established the pack and, like, made it what it was. And then, it, you know, being the pack, the alpha is definitely not, like, necessarily biological or hereditary, but, like, dominance, you know, is somewhat genetically related. And so his family has had a long line of very dominant bears who were the most dominant and therefore became the alpha. So his father had been alpha back in the day, probably, like, I think it's like 15 years earlier. And his father had no symptoms of being mad at all, but one day woke up and basically went crazy and started killing Psy. Silver tells Valentine that she wonders if he was a part of an experiment on changelings that was happening in the region. So that doesn't get resolved, but, like, just know that that is a possible explanation. But basically, there's this history or feeling that Valentine's family might have this propensity to go mad. When his father did that, he ended up dying. His seconds all took him down. But his wife, through, like, sheer force of will, did not die with him, which is typically what happens when your mate dies. If you don't die, then, like, you can, like, white knuckle it to try to live long enough to raise your kids, but that's about it. And so as soon as Valentine has three sisters who are all older than him, as soon as his oldest sister was of age, Valentine's mother essentially shifted into her bear form and has never come out of that because she is so lost in her grief. And so that is, like, the history of the pack. They managed to keep the whole situation with his dad under wraps. So the wider world doesn't know this happened, but the pack does. And when Valentine becomes alpha, a portion of the pack assumes that he is going to go crazy again. And so they kind of leave and kind of don't. And what that has created is this really tense situation where about a quarter of their group is living, you know, a few miles away in this, like, substandard den, and they all still have this, what we, in the context of what we know about how changelings work, this psychic connection to Valentine, but they're not near him. We also find out that apparently bears need even more, like, direct contact with their alpha than a lot of other shifters do. So, like, you constantly see Valentine, like, picking up the kids and hugging them and, like, you know, giving his pack mates actual direct, you know, kind of like physical touch. And so he's still having to go and do that for, especially for the children. And every time he does it, it just like breaks his heart. It's just, it's creating this situation where it's neither here nor there, right? Like half in, half out. And it's so emotionally straining for him. And what is repeated over and over again, and we've seen this in the last couple of books, I think this theme has been developing, is this idea that the alpha's heart is the biggest heart in the pack because he has this, he or she has this impulse to love the entirety of their family. And that the impulse is to have more family members to love. Like that ultimately is what drives their protective urges. And so he still loves these members and he still wants them near. And he apparently has been far more patient about this than really like any alpha ever is. Because it is such an emotional strain on an alpha to have these people that he is psychically connected to, but then can't actually really protect. And so he's let them linger on the land, and basically it's just creating even, it's breaking everyone's heart and it's creating these divisions because in their head, the rest of the pack who stayed knows that he needs to cut those people off, but they don't, they want them to come back. Like, that's what they want. But they also know that he's ultimately going to have to make a decision to just, like, either they have to come back or they have to let go. And so I think that, well, again, we'll get into that here in a little bit, but that's sort of like his emotional conflict that's going on right now is A, the shame and the feeling, like, he's worried. I mean, he's not completely confident that he's not going to go crazy someday, but also just the strain of having these people be away from him. So eventually there comes to be this sort of breaking point and reckoning where he tells the adults who made the choice to leave, like, hey, look, either you come back or you have to find an alpha who can defend your territory. If you can't, you're going to have to leave. Like, that's just the way it works. Like, that's what our animals need. And you've got a month to do this. And by finally giving them that ultimatum, they do ultimately decide to come back. And so there's a big celebration. The other thing that happens is part of when Silver is really, like, accepting her role as the mate to this alpha and really deciding she's going to stay, is she goes and confronts Valentine's mom and says, like, basically the same thing of, you can't keep torturing your children by letting them see that you're here, but never fully being a part of their lives again. You either need to shift and come be a part of the group, or you've got to go. And if you don't leave, I will chase you off. Like, she really gives her the business. And so ultimately his mom also decides to return. And that's really, okay, so I think I've done most of the plot justice, so I can start finally giving you my thoughts, which is what I was like holding myself back from doing. So, like, on paper, a lot of things in this book, I think, make a lot of sense. And there's definitely parts of this book I find really satisfying. So, for instance, I do really like that mirroring and that kind of establishment of who Valentine is with his ability to let the people he loves push him away for a long time, but him having that steadfastness and the ability, like, that is really, I mean, it's a beautiful message, basically, that his strength is that he can continue to love and to hold space for people who have really pushed him away and hurt him. Like, like, what a beautiful message and what a beautiful part of his character. And we see that mirrored first with the pack who's pushed him away, and then Silver pushes him away, and then he's had this long-standing issue of his mother pushing him away. And by the end of the book, he's gotten all, like, basically he's rewarded for his ability to withstand and not to necessarily take direct abuse, but to give space for people to work out what they're going through in order to come back and be a part of his life. And, you know, I think you could get into a conversation about, like, when do you cut people off? And I do like that he does have this moment of clarity with the pack that's left of, like, okay, I've given you a lot of space, but this is as far as it can go. Like, I cannot bear anymore. So I like that we see him having a boundary. But I do also just love that this is a part of what makes him strong, and what makes him an alpha is not just that he's physically dominating, and we see moments of him kind of getting into action. He's apparently like the biggest bear of any of them, which is fun to hear described, but he does have the physical dominance. He also is very smart, despite him being, again, like I said, as close as Nalini Singh has ever gotten to making a himbo, he actually is very smart. And he is very sly, or he when he forces himself to like pause and think things through, he can, be a little bit crafty, etc. We also see him sort of using his innate charm to get information from people. And people are always exasperatingly just saying like, oh, bears. It's like you can't stay mad at them. And that's a part of their, ability to just kind of outlast people's anger at them. So, we see him being crafty, etc. But all that to say, I really like that a part of what his key sort of like strength as an alpha is that capacity to have enduring love that can withstand people trying to push him away. I think that's a beautiful message. So I like on paper that. I think the problem I have with this book upon rereading is that there is too much telling and not enough showing, which is something that I very rarely say about a Nalini Singh book. But I wonder if we had seen this pack established, maybe even just in Allegiance of Honor, if some of this would have felt more natural and less like I was just being told, because I really like all of the characters we're meeting. The bears at this point have become a very beloved element of these books. Like in season two, people really like seeing them. I like seeing them. I like hearing from them. They have a very distinct flavor of cozy community vibes, which we'll get into later. Like there is definitely a coziness to this bear pack. And I really, it's not that I don't like it. I just think that she had to do so much explaining of what the situation was that it didn't give enough time for the genuine kind of way the story unfurls to happen in the same way. And so it felt more like I understood, like intellectually, I understood a lot of the beats of the plot, but I don't know that it felt as organic and as just like, of course, this is how this has to flow, as most of her like excellent books do. And it's a shame because I like the romance. I like the romance part of this. I just think that some of the other, like, for instance, the poisoning plot essentially gets completely sidetracked for a good, like, 40% of the book. So it's like, it's the main sort of plot engine, and then it just sort of goes away because there's all these other things that have to come in to support sort of building up the backstory for this pack. I don't know. I just think that this one didn't come together as strongly as I really wanted it to, because I love Silver as a character. I love Valentine as a character. Like, all of the main characters in this are great. And I really like the ideas of the book. I mean, like, I continue to really love the development that we saw in Allegiance of Honor, where Psy need humans in their network for it to be healthy. And another revelation she has, kind of Silver realizes when she doesn't get pulled out of the Psy net because she's mated with Valentine, is that it used to be totally normal for there to be Psy changeling matings. And so, like, of course you could stay in the Psy net. It just sort of brings Valentine into the orbit of the Psy net. And part of what she, the sort of big realization of the last couple of books is, for the Psy net to be healthy, there has to be all of this cross race connection. Like, that is what makes the Psy net healthy. It is not healthy for the Psy to just be off by themselves. And so, like, I love that as a theme, and I love that that continues to be sort of, like, the overall driving message, I feel like, of the series, of, like, stronger together, basically, of just, like, the world is best when we are connected to each other, and when different kinds of people love each other and have connections with each other and have different, business relationships and friendships, and, like, just that the world is meant to be a lot of different kinds of people in community together. Like, I love that as a message. And I think, again, on paper, I like those beats of the story. I just think that the way that they got kind of, like, actually unfolded felt kind of choppy in places. And I hate saying that because I really love all of the disparate elements of this. I just feel like the book itself, it dragged in certain places, and then in other places it felt like, whoa, like that just sort of happened. I don't know. I just feel like this one didn't fully cook and come together as strongly as like the best books in the series do. Now, all of this is a caveated by like, these books are all great. Even my least favorite Side-Changeling books, I love. So, I mean, you know, take all of this with a grain of salt in terms of my overall opinion. Like, I still really enjoyed this book and would still rather read it than any number of other books that are currently on my TBR. But it did surprise me. I think this is the first time where I remembered liking a book better than I actually liked it so far in this reread, and that kind of bummed me out. So I do, like I said, I really like what this book is doing. I will tell you, I remember not loving Ocean Light, which is the next one. So I'm wondering if now that I'm doing this reread, because Wolf Rain, Alpha Knight, and Last Guard are three excellent books, and those are the other books that are out so far in the Side-Changeling Trinity season. So it's not that like, oh, this book is just not, like the season isn't as good. It's not that. I'm just wondering if maybe it took a few books to sort of like get sort of the momentum back up for the second season. I mean, like, for instance, if you compare this as a first book in a season versus Slave to Sensation, there's just no comparison, right? Like, Slave to Sensation is an incredibly strong opening book, and it works both as a romance and as a first book in the macro plot sense. And I'm wondering if this book, it had a lot that it needed to do as sort of the first book in the season. And I think the path to get there wasn't as smooth as we've seen in other books. So I feel like I'm dogging this book and I don't want to because I do still really like it. And I do love Silver and Valentine. I love it whenever they show back up. Silver is probably one of my favorite like heroines. I really love her strength. I also love that Valentine loves how strong she is. He refers to her as an alpha, like she is the alpha in waiting for her pack. He calls her Silver fucking Merchant. Like, he's like, yes, he loves her strength. He always is comparing to her to like a queen, that she treats everyone around her like she, you know, they are kind of her subjects, not in a bad way, not in like a condescending way, but just sort of, she has that sort of just authoritative bearing about her and that kind of regal, you know, grace and natural authority that we think of as sort of like a queenly quality. So he loves that about her, and I love that about her. I love that she is so unapologetically competent, strong, but not in a like quote-unquote kick-ass heroine kind of way, like not in a facile way, but just because, I don't know, we've seen her over the course of a lot of books and it just sort of flows naturally from who she is. I also love her kind of having this new sense of her relationship with Caleb. Caleb actually at some point direct, like specifically is like, you need to stop calling me sir and just start calling me Caleb because you are the director of Imnet, like basically saying like we are peers in a way that maybe we weren't, or that we, I guess, certainly were not when you were just my aide. So, and you know, he's also now a part of the Merchant family. So, yeah, so, you know, that's kind of a great moment. And we see her coming into her own, I think, in this book and really owning what it will mean for her to be the director. I don't know. I mean, like, I really like her a lot. She's one of my favorite heroines, I think, in the series. And I think it just bums me out that the book as a whole isn't better because I like her so much and because I like Valentine so much. So anyway, I think that those are most of my thoughts. Getting into ratings, I will say Cozy Community Vibes, I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 adorable bear cubs crawling up your legs. Like, this one definitely has a lot of coziness as we get to know the bear clan. We get to see what den home is like. It basically seems like it's always kind of a raucous party in the den. They're just like a bunch of good time gals and guys. So, you know, the bears are just fun to hang out with. They have a really lovely sense of community, and it is very satisfying when that community is healed and the ones who had left come back. So we'll give that 8 out of 10. In terms of political machinations I'm gonna give this like 6 out of 10 fringe human extremists trying to murder, you know, political figures. We definitely have political machinations happening. I wouldn't say that this one feels overly dominated by that stuff. It feels more just sort of like groundwork being laid. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely there. And I think it's what is there is satisfying. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10. Loves licking up her honeys for sexy times, just because I do think that the sexy times that are there are very good, but they're not, there's not a lot of it. It's a very slow build, and it doesn't feel as sexy as some of the other slow builds. So, like, for instance, Kiss of Snow is a slow burn, but there's a lot of sexual tension and a lot of lead up to it, so it still feels like a pretty sexy book. This one, not as much. I mean, I like the actual sexy times, but I don't think this is one of the, like, sexier books in the series. And then I'll give it 8 out of 10. I will still be waiting for you when you can't love me anymore for the angst, because Valentine is such a sweet puppy, and he is just able, his big bear heart is just able to handle a lot of rejection and still maintain hope and still maintain, just like holding space for people he loves. And when Silver won't have him anymore, it is very sad. So I do think that this one, it has a good amount of angst in it. So if you like that in these books, I think that will be satisfying. So yeah, overall, my first time around, I gave this a 4-star, and this time I think I would give it a 3.5, which for me is like a B+. It's a good book. I still like it. But I just think that I see some of the holes in it a little bit more this time around, which is too bad. But, you know, such is life. I still got to spend time with all of my favorite characters, so that's always great. Okay, so I think that does it for Silver Silence. Next is, it's called Ocean Light, right? It's the next one. It's Bowen's book. Strap in. And it involves somebody from Black Sea, so get excited for that. That will be coming next. And it's interesting knowing that the next book is Bowen's book, considering that when we leave him in this one, he is on life support. So you'll have to tune back in to see how all of that gets resolved. But yeah, I think that will do it for me. So if you enjoyed the podcast, do take a minute to rate and review. It helps other people find us. If you would like to talk more to me, you can follow me at Books Like Woe pretty much everywhere. I'm on Goodreads and YouTube and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, all the things at Books Like Woe. You can find me there. And yeah, I think that will do it for me for now. I hope you guys are having an absolutely great day, and I will talk to you in 2 weeks to discuss Bowen's book. So I will see you then. Bye!